There are a lot of people who need good healers these days. She said the last part quietly. For all she knew, the girl might support the King of Otterlin, might report her to the small town guard for just speaking ill of the king. Irene had seen it happen before, far too many times. But the girl looked toward the door with its makeshift bolt that Irene had constructed, at the closet that she called her bedroom, at the threadbare cloak draped over the half-rotted chair against the opposite wall, then finally back at her. It gave Irene a chance to study her face. Seeing how easily she'd trounced those mercenaries, whoever had harmed her must be fearsome indeed. You'd really come back to this continent? To the Empire? There was such quiet surprise in her voice that Irene met her eyes. It's the right thing to do, was all Irene could think of to say. The girl didn't reply, and Irene continued wrapping her arm. When she was finished, the girl shrugged on her shirt and tunic back, tested her arm, and stood. In the cramped bedroom, Irene felt so much smaller than the stranger, even if there were only a few inches difference between them. The girl picked up her cloak, but didn't don it as she took a step toward the closed door.
I could find something for your face, Irene blurted.
The girl paused with a hand on the doorknob and looked over her shoulder. These are meant to be a reminder.
For what? Or to whom?
She shouldn't pry, shouldn't have even asked. She smiled bitterly. For me. Irene thought of the scars she'd seen on her body, and wondered if those were all reminders, too.
The young woman turned back to the door, but stopped again.
Whether you stay, or go to Antica and attend the Torre Chesme and return to save the world, she mused. You should probably learn a thing or two about defending yourself. Irene eyed the daggers at the girl's waist, the sword she hadn't even needed to draw, jewels embedded in the hilt, real jewels, glinted in the candlelight. The girl had to be fabulously wealthy, richer than Irene could ever conceive of being.
I can't afford weapons.
The girl huffed a laugh. If you learn these maneuvers, you won't need them. Selena took the barmaid into the alley, if only because she didn't want to wake the other inn guests and get into yet another fight. She didn't really know why she'd offered to teach her to defend herself. The last time she'd helped anybody, it had just turned around to beat the hell out of her. Literally. But the barmaid, Irene, had looked so earnest when she talked about helping people, about being a healer. The Torre Chesme. Any healers worth their salt knew about the academy in Antica, where the best and brightest, no matter their station, could study. Selena had once dreamed of dwelling in the fabled cream-colored towers of the Torre, of walking the narrow, sloping streets of Antica, and seeing wonders brought in from lands she'd never heard of. But that was a lifetime ago, a different person ago. Not now, certainly. And if Irene stayed in this gods-forsaken town, other people were bound to try to attack her again. So here Selena was, cursing her own conscience for a fool as they stood in the misty alley behind the inn. The bodies of the three mercenaries were still out there, and Selena caught Irene cringing at the sound of scurrying feet and soft squeaking. The rats hadn't wasted any time. Selena gripped the girl's wrist and held up her hand. People, men, usually don't hunt for the women who look like they'll put up a fight. They'll pick you because you look off guard or vulnerable or like you'd be sympathetic. They'll usually try to move you to another location where they won't need to worry about being interrupted. Irene's eyes were wide, her face pale in the light of the torch Selena had dropped just outside the back door. Helpless. What was it like to be helpless to defend yourself? A shudder that had nothing to do with the rats gnawing on the dead mercenaries went through her. Do not let them move you to another location, Selena continued, reciting from the lessons that Ben, Aerobin II, had once taught her. She'd learned self-defense before she'd ever learned to attack anyone, and to first fight without weapons, too. Fight back enough to convince them that you're not worth it, and make as much noise as you can. In a shithole like this, though, I bet no one will bother coming to help you. But you should still start screaming your head off about a fire. Not rape, not theft, not something that cowards would rather hide from. And if shouting doesn't discourage them, then there are a few tricks to outsmart them. Some might make them drop like a stone. Some might get them down temporarily. But as soon as they let go of you, your biggest priority is getting the hell away. You understand? They let you go, you run. Irene nodded, still wide-eyed. She remained that way as Selena took the hand she'd lifted and walked her through the eye gouge, showing her how to shove her thumbs into the corner of someone's eyes, crook her thumbs back behind the eyeballs, and, well, Selena couldn't actually finish that part since she liked her own eyeballs very much. But Irene grasped it after a few times, and did it perfectly when Selena grabbed her from behind again and again. She then showed her the ear clap, then how to pinch the inside of a man's upper thigh hard enough to make him scream, where to stomp on the most delicate part of the foot, what soft spots were the best to hit with her elbow. Irene actually hit her so hard in the throat that Selena gagged for a good minute, and then told her to go for the groin. Always try to go for a strike to the groin. And when the moon was setting, when Selena was convinced that Irene might stand a chance against an assailant, they finally stopped. Irene seemed to be holding herself a bit taller, her face flushed. "If they come after you for money," Selena said, jerking her chin toward where the mercenaries lay in a heap, "throw whatever coins you have far away from you and run in the opposite direction. Usually they'll be so occupied by chasing after your money that you'll have a good chance of escape." Irene nodded. I should teach all this to Jessa. Selena didn't know or care who Jessa was, but she said, "If you get the chance, teach it to any female who will take the time to listen." Silence fell between them. There was so much more to learn, so much else to teach her. But dawn was about 2 hours away, and she should probably go back to her room now, if only to pack and go. Go, not because she was ordered to, or because she found her punishment acceptable, but because she needed to. She needed to go to the Red Desert. Even if it was only to see where the word planned to lead her. Staying, running away to another land, avoiding her fate. She wouldn't do that. She couldn't be like Irene. A living reminder of loss and shoved aside dreams. No. She'd continue to the Red Desert and follow this path, wherever it led, however much it stung her pride. Irene cleared her throat. Did you ever have to use these maneuvers? Not to pry. I mean, you don't have to answer if...
I've used them, yes. But not because I was in that kind of situation. She knew she shouldn't say it. But she did. I'm usually the one who does the hunting.
Irene, to her surprise, just nodded, if a bit sadly. There was such irony, she realized, in them working together. The assassin and the healer. Two opposite sides of the coin. Irene wrapped her arms around herself.
How can I ever repay you for...
But Selena held up a hand. The alley was empty, but she could feel them. Could hear the shift in the fog, in the scurrying of the rats. Pockets of quiet. She met Irene's stare and flicked her eyes toward the back door. A silent command. Irene had gone white and stiff. It was one thing to practice, but to put lessons into action? To use them? Irene was more of a liability. Selena jerked her chin at the door. An order now. There were at least 5 men, two on either end of the alley converging upon them, and one more standing guard by the busier end of the street. Irene was through the back door by the time Selena drew her sword. Chapter 5. In the darkened kitchen, Irene leaned against the back door, a hand on her hammering heart as she listened to the melee outside. Earlier, the girl had the element of surprise, but how could she face them again? Her hands trembled as the sound of clashing blades and shouts filtered through the crack beneath the door. Thumps, grunts, growls. What was happening? She couldn't stand it,
not knowing what was happening to the girl. It went against every instinct to open up the back door and peer out. Her breath caught in her throat at the sight. The mercenary who had escaped earlier had returned with more friends. More skilled friends. Two were face down on the cobblestones, pools of blood around them. But the remaining three were engaged with the girl who was... Gods, she moved like a black wind. Such lethal grace, and... A hand closed over Irene's mouth as someone grabbed her from behind and pressed something cold and sharp against her throat. There had been another man. He came in through the inn.
Walk,
he breathed in her ear, his voice rough and foreign. She couldn't see him, couldn't tell anything about him beyond the hardness of his body, the reek of his clothes, the scratch of a heavy beard against her cheek. He flung open the door and, still holding the dagger to Irene's neck, strode into the alley. The young woman stopped fighting. Another mercenary had gone down, and the two before her had their blades pointed at her.
Drop your weapons,
the man said. Irene would have shaken her head, but the dagger was pressed so close that any movement she made would have slit her own throat. The young woman eyed the men, then Irene's captor, then Irene herself. Calm, utterly calm and cold, as she bared her teeth in a feral grin. Come and get them. Irene's stomach dropped. The man had only to shift his wrist and he'd spill her life's blood. She wasn't ready to die. Not now. Not in Inish. Her captor chuckled.
Bold and foolish words, girl.
He pushed the blade harder, and Irene winced. She felt the dampness of her blood before she realized he'd cut a thin line across her neck.
Silpa, save her.
But the girl's eyes were on Irene, and they narrowed slightly. In challenge, in a command.
Fight back, she seemed to say. Fight for your miserable life.
The two men with the swords circled closer, but she didn't lower her blade.
Drop your weapons before I cut her open.
Irene's captor growled.
Once we're done making you pay for our comrades, for all the money you cost us with their deaths, maybe we'll let her live.
He squeezed Irene tighter, but the young woman just watched him. The mercenary hissed.
Drop your weapons.
She didn't. Gods, she was going to let him kill her, wasn't she? Irene couldn't die like this. Not here. Not as a no-name barmaid in this horrible place. Wouldn't die like this. Her mother had gone down swinging. Her mother had fought for her, had killed that soldier so Irene could have a chance to flee, to make something of her life. To do some good for the world. She wouldn't die like this. The rage hit, so staggering that Irene could hardly see through it, could hardly see anything except a year in Inish, a future beyond her grasp, and a life she was not ready to part with. She gave no warning before she stomped down as hard as she could on the bridge of the man's foot. He jerked, howling, but Irene brought up her arms, shoving the dagger from her throat with one hand as she drove her elbow into his gut. Drove it with every bit of rage she had burning in her. He groaned as he doubled over, and she slammed her elbow into his temple, just as the girl had shown her. The man collapsed to his knees, and Irene bolted. To run, to help, she didn't know. But the girl was already standing in front of her, grinning broadly. Behind her, the two men lay unmoving, and the man on his knees. Irene dodged aside as the young woman grabbed the gasping man and dragged him into the dark mist beyond. There was a muffled scream, then a thump. And despite her healer's blood, despite the stomach she'd inherited, Irene barely made it two steps before she vomited. When she was done, she found the young woman watching her again, smiling faintly. Fast learner, she said. Her fine clothes, even her darkly glittering ruby brooch, were covered with blood. Not her own, Irene noted with some relief. You sure you want to be a healer? Irene wiped her mouth on the corner of her napkin. She didn't know what the alternative was, what this girl might be. No, all she wanted was to smack her, hard.
You could have dispatched them without me. But you let that man hold a knife to my throat. You let him. Are you insane?
The girl smiled in such a way that said yes, she was most certainly insane. But she said, those men were a joke. I wanted you to get some real experience in a controlled environment.
You call that controlled?
Irene couldn't help shouting. She put a hand to the already clotted slice in her neck. It would heal quickly, but might scar. She'd have to inspect it immediately. Look at it this way, Irene Towers. Now you know you can do it. That man was twice your weight and had almost a foot on you, and you downed him in a few heartbeats.
You said those men were a joke.
A fiendish grin. To me they are. Irene's blood chilled.
I've had enough of today. I think I need to go to bed.
The girl sketched a bow. And I should probably be on my way. Word of advice? Wash the blood out of your clothes, and don't tell anyone what you saw tonight. Those men might have more friends, and as far as I'm concerned, they were the unfortunate victims of a horrible robbery.
She held up a leather pouch heavy with coins, and stalked past Irene into the inn.
Irene spared a glance at the bodies, felt a heavy weight drop into her stomach, and followed the girl inside. She was still furious with her, still shaking with the remnants of terror and desperation. So she didn't say goodbye to the deadly girl as she vanished.
Chapter 6 Irene did as the girl said, and changed into another gown and apron before going to the kitchens to wash the blood from her clothes. Her hands were shaking so badly that it took longer than usual to wash the clothing. And by the time she finished, the pale light of dawn was creeping through the kitchen window. She had to be up in, well, now. Groaning, she trudged back to her room to hang the wet clothes to dry. If someone saw her laundry drying, it would only raise suspicion. She supposed she would have to be the one to pretend to find the bodies, too. Gods, what a mess. Wincing at the thought of the long, long day ahead of her, trying to make sense of the night she'd just had, Irene entered her room and softly shut the door. Even if she told someone, they probably wouldn't believe her. It wasn't until she was done hanging her clothes on the hooks embedded in the wall that she noticed the leather pouch on the bed and the note pinned beneath it. She knew what was inside, could easily guess based on the lumps and edges. Her breath caught in her throat as she pulled out the note. There, in elegant feminine handwriting, the girl had written, "For wherever you need to go, and then some, the world needs more healers." No name, no date. Staring at the paper, she could almost picture the girl's feral smile and the defiance in her eyes. This note, if anything, was a challenge, a dare.
Hands shaking anew, Irene dumped out the contents of the pouch. The pile of gold coins shimmered, and Irene staggered back, collapsing into the rickety chair across from the bed. She blinked, and blinked again. Not just gold, but also the brooch the girl had been wearing, its massive ruby smoldering in the candlelight. A hand to her mouth, Irene stared at the door, at the ceiling, then back at the small fortune sitting on her bed. Stared and stared and stared. The gods had vanished, her mother had once claimed. But had they? Had it been some god who had visited tonight, clothed in the skin of a battered young woman? Or had it merely been their distant whispers that prompted the stranger to walk down that alley? She would never know, she supposed. And maybe that was the whole point. Wherever you need to go. Gods or fate or just pure coincidence and kindness. It was a gift. This was a gift. The world was wide open and hers for the taking if she dared. She could go to Antica, attend the Torre Chesme, go anywhere she wished. If she dared. Irene smiled. An hour later, no one stopped Irene Towers as she walked out of the White Pig and never looked back.
Washed and dressed in a new tunic, Selena boarded the ship an hour before dawn.
It was her own damn fault that she felt hollow and lightheaded after a night without rest. But she could sleep today. Sleep the whole journey across the Gulf of Oro to the deserted land. She should sleep, because once she landed in Yerpa, she had a trek across blistering, deadly sands. A week, at least, through the desert before they reached the Mute Master and his fortress of silent assassins.
The captain didn't ask questions when she pressed a piece of silver into his palm and went below decks, following his directions to find her stateroom. With the hood and blades, she knew none of the sailors would bother her. And while she now had to be careful with the money she had left, she knew she'd hand over another silver piece or two before the voyage was done.
Sighing, Selena entered her cabin, small but clean, with a little window that looked out onto the dawn gray bay. She locked the door behind her and slumped onto the tiny bed. She'd seen enough of Inish. She didn't need to bother watching the departure.
She'd been on her way out of the inn when she'd passed that horrifically small closet Irene called a bedroom. While Irene had tended to her arm, Selena had been astounded by the cramped conditions. The rickety furniture, the two thin blankets. She'd planned to leave some coins for Irene anyway, if only because she was certain the innkeeper would make Irene pay for those bandages. But Selena had stood in front of that wooden door to the bedroom, listening to Irene wash her clothes in the nearby kitchen. She found herself unable to turn away, unable to stop thinking about the would-be healer with the brown gold hair and caramel eyes. Of what Irene had lost, and how helpless she'd become. There were so many of them now. The children who had lost everything to Otterlin. Children who had now grown into assassins and barmaids, without a true place to call home. Their native kingdoms left in ruin and ash. Magic had been gone all these years, and the gods were dead, or simply didn't care anymore. Yet there, deep in her gut, was a small but insistent tug. A tug on a strand of some invisible web. So Selena decided to tug back, just to see how far and wide the reverberations would go. It was a matter of moments to write the note, and then stuff most of her gold pieces into the pouch. A heartbeat later, she'd set it on Irene's sagging cot. She'd added Arobin's ruby brooch as a parting thought. She wondered if a girl from ravaged Fenharrow wouldn't mind a brooch in Otterlin's royal colors. But Selena was glad to be rid of it, and hoped Irene would pawn the piece for the small fortune it was worth. Hoped that an assassin's jewel would pay for a healer's education. So maybe it was the gods at work. Maybe it was some force beyond them, beyond mortal comprehension. Or maybe it was just for what and who Selena would never be. Irene was still washing her bloodied clothes in the kitchen when Selena slipped out of her room, then down the hall, and left the white pig behind. As she stalked through the foggy streets toward the ramshackle docks, Selena had prayed Irene Towers wasn't foolish enough to tell anyone, especially the innkeeper, about the money. Prayed Irene Towers seized her life with both hands and set out for the pale-stoned city of Antica. Prayed that somehow, years from now, Irene Towers would return to this continent. And maybe, just maybe, heal their shattered world a little bit. Smiling to herself in the confines of her cabin, Selena nestled into the bed, pulled her hood low over her eyes, and crossed her ankles. By the time the ship set sail across the jade-green gulf, the assassin was fast asleep. The Assassin and the Desert. Chapter 1. There was nothing left in the world except sand and wind. At least, that's how it seemed to Selena Sardothian, as she stood atop the crimson dune and gazed across the desert. Even with the wind, the heat was stifling, and sweat made her many layers of clothes cling to her body. But sweating, her nomad guide had told her, was a good thing. It was when you didn't sweat that the red desert became deadly. Sweat reminded you to drink. When the heat evaporated your perspiration before you could realize you were sweating,
That's when you would cross into dehydration and not know it. Oh, the miserable heat. It invaded every pore of her, made her head throb and her bones ache. The muggy warmth of Skull's Bay had been nothing compared to this. What she wouldn't give for just the briefest of cool breezes. Beside her, the nomad guide pointed a gloved finger toward the southwest.
The Sezi's Sukast are there.
Sezi's Sukast? The Silent Assassins. The legendary order that she'd been sent here to train with.
To learn obedience and discipline,
Aerobin Hommel had said. In the height of summer in the Red Desert was what he'd failed to add. It was a punishment. 2 months ago, when Aerobin had sent Selena along with Sam Cortland to Skull's Bay on an unknown errand, they'd discovered that he'd actually dispatched them to trade in slaves. Needless to say, that hadn't sat well with Selena or Sam, despite their occupation. So they'd freed the slaves, deciding to damn the consequences. But now, as punishments went, this was probably the worst. Given the bruises and cuts that were still healing on her face a month after Aerobin had bestowed them, that was saying something. Selena scowled. She pulled the scarf a bit higher over her mouth and nose as she took a step down the dune. Her legs strained against the sliding sand, but it was a welcome freedom after the harrowing trek through the singing sands, where each grain had hummed and whined and moaned. They'd spent a whole day monitoring each step, careful to keep the sand beneath them ringing in harmony. Or else, the nomad had told her, the sands could dissolve into quicksand. Selena descended the dune, but paused when she didn't hear her guide's footsteps. "Aren't you coming?" The man remained atop the dune and pointed again to the horizon.
2 miles that way.
His use of the common tongue was a bit unwieldy, but she understood him well enough. She pulled down the scarf from her mouth, wincing as a gust of sand stung her sweaty face. I paid you to take me there.
2 miles,
he said, adjusting the large pack on his back. The scarf around his head obscured his tanned features, but she could still see the fear in his eyes. Yes, yes, the Sezi's Sukast were feared and respected in the desert. It had been a miracle that she'd found a guide willing to take her this close to their fortress. Of course, offering gold had helped. But the nomads viewed the Sezi's Sukast as little less than shadows of death, and apparently, her guide would go no farther. She studied the westward horizon. She could see nothing beyond dunes and sand that rippled like the surface of a wind-blown sea.
2 miles,
the nomad said behind her.
They will find you.
Selena turned to ask him another question, but he had already disappeared over the other side of the dune. Cursing him, she tried to swallow, but failed. Her mouth was too dry. She had to start now, or else she'd need to set up her tent to sleep out the unforgiving midday and afternoon heat. 2 miles. How long could that take? Taking a sip from her unnervingly light water skin, Selena pulled her scarf back over her mouth and nose and began walking. The only sound was the wind hissing through the sand. Hours later, Selena found herself using all of her self-restraint to avoid leaping into the courtyard pools or kneeling to drink at one of the little rivers running along the floor. No one had offered her water upon her arrival, and she didn't think her current escort was inclined to do so either, as he led her through the winding halls of the red sandstone fortress. The 2 miles had felt more like 20. She had been just about to stop and set up her tent when she'd crested a dune, and the lush green trees and adobe fortress had spread before her, hidden in an oasis nestled between 2 monstrous sand dunes. After all that, she was parched. But she was Selena Sardothian. She had a reputation to uphold. She kept her senses alert as they walked farther into the fortress, taking in exits and windows, noting where sentries were stationed. They passed a row of open-air training rooms in which she could see people from all kingdoms and of all ages sparring or exercising, or just sitting quietly, lost in meditation.
They climbed a narrow flight of steps that went up and up into a large building. The shade of the stairwell was wonderfully cool, but then they entered a long, enclosed hall, and the heat wrapped around her like a blanket. For a fortress of supposedly silent assassins, the place was fairly noisy, with the clatter of weapons from the training rooms, the buzzing of insects in the many trees and bushes, the chatter of birds, the gurgle of all that crystal-clear water running through every room and hall. They approached an open set of doors at the end of the hallway. Her escort, a middle-aged man flecked with scars that stood out like chalk against his tan skin, said nothing to her. Beyond the doors, the interior was a mixture of shadow and light. They entered a giant chamber flanked by blue-painted wooden pillars that supported a mezzanine on either side. A glance into the darkness of the balcony informed her that there were figures lurking there, watching. Waiting. There were more in the shadows of the columns. Whoever they thought she was, they certainly weren't underestimating her. Good. A narrow mosaic of green and blue glass tiles wove through the floor toward the dais, echoing the little rivers on the lower level. Atop the dais, seated among cushions and potted plants, was a white-robed man. The mute master. She had expected him to be ancient. But he seemed to be around 50. She kept her chin held high as they approached him, following the tile path in the floor. She couldn't tell if the master's skin had always been that tan, or if it was from the sun. He smiled slightly. He'd probably been handsome in his youth. Sweat oozed down Selena's spine. Though the master had no visible weapons, the two servants fanning him with palm leaves were armed to the teeth. Her escort stopped a safe distance from the master and bowed. Selena did the same, and when she raised herself, she removed the hood from over her hair. She was sure it was a mess and disgustingly greasy after 2 weeks in the desert, with no water to bathe in. But she wasn't here to impress him with her beauty. The mute master looked her up and down, and then nodded. Her escort nudged her with an elbow, and Selena cleared her dry throat as she stepped forward. She knew the mute master wouldn't say anything. His self-imposed silence was well known. It was incumbent upon her to make the introduction. Arabin had told her exactly what to say. Ordered her was more like it. There would be no disguises, no masks, no fake names. Since she had shown such disregard for Arabin's best interests, he no longer had any inclination to protect hers. She debated for weeks how she might find a way to protect her identity, to keep these strangers from knowing who she was. But Arobin's orders had been simple. She had 1 month to win the mute master's respect. And if she didn't return home with his letter of approval, a letter about Selena Sardothian, she'd better find a new city to live in, possibly a new continent. "Thank you for granting me an audience, Master of the Silent Assassins," she said, silently cursing the stiffness of her words. She put a hand over her heart and dropped to both knees. "I am Selena Sardothian, protege of Arabin Hommel, King of the Northern Assassins." Adding Northern seemed appropriate. She didn't think the Mute Master would be much pleased to learn that Arabin called himself King of all the Assassins. But whether or not it surprised him, his face revealed nothing, though she sensed some of the people in the shadows shifting on their feet. "My master sent me here to beseech you to train me," she said, chafing at the words. "Train her." She lowered her head so the master wouldn't see the ire on her face. "I am yours." She tilted her palms face up in a gesture of supplication. Nothing. Warmth worse than the heat of the desert singed her cheeks. She kept her head down, her arms still upheld. Cloth rustled. Then near-silent steps echoed through the chamber. At last, two bare brown feet stopped before her. A dry finger tilted her chin up, and Selena found herself staring into the sea-green eyes of the master. She didn't dare move. With one movement, the master could snap her neck. This was a test. A test of trust, she realized. She willed herself into stillness, focusing on the details of his face to avoid thinking about how vulnerable she was. Sweat beaded along the border of his dark hair, which was cropped close to his head. It was impossible to tell what kingdom he hailed from. His hazelnut skin suggested Eelway, but his elegant almond-shaped eyes suggested one of the countries in the distant southern continent. Regardless, how had he wound up here? She braced herself as his long fingers pushed back the loose strands of her braided hair, revealing the yellowing bruises still lingering around her eyes and cheeks, and the narrow arc of the scab along her cheekbone. Had Aerobin sent word that she would be coming? Had he told him the circumstances under which she'd been packed off? The master didn't seem at all surprised by her arrival. But the master's eyes narrowed, his lips forming a tight line as he looked at the remnants of the bruises on the other side of her face. She was lucky that Aerobin was skilled enough to keep his blows from permanently marring her. A twinge of guilt went through her, as she wondered if Sam had healed as well. In the 3 days following her beating, she hadn't seen him around the keep. She'd blacked out before Aerobin could deal with her companion. And since that night, even during her trip out here, everything had been a haze of rage and sorrow and bone-deep weariness, as if she were dreaming while awake. She calmed her thundering heart just as the master released her face and stepped back. He motioned with a hand for her to rise, which she did to the relief of her aching knees. The master gave her a crooked smile. She would have echoed the expression, but an instant later he snapped his fingers, triggering 4 men to charge at her. Chapter 2. They didn't have weapons, but their intent was clear enough. The first man, clad in the loose, layered clothing that everyone here wore, reached her, and she dodged the sweeping blow aimed at her face. His arm shot past her, and she grabbed it by the wrist and bicep, locking and twisting his arm so he grunted with pain. She whirled him around, careening him into the second attacker hard enough that the 2 men went tumbling to the ground. Selena leapt back, landing where her escort had been standing only seconds before, careful to avoid crashing into the master. This was another test, a test to see at what level she might begin her training, and if she was worthy. Of course she was worthy. She was Selena Sardothian, gods be damned. The 3rd man pulled out 2 crescent-shaped daggers from the folds of his beige tunic and slashed at her. Her layered clothing was too cumbersome for her to dart away fast enough, so as he swiped for her face, she bent back. Her spine straightened, but the 2 blades passed overhead, slicing through an errant strand of her hair. She dropped to the ground and lashed out with a leg, sweeping the man off his feet. The 4th man, though, had come up behind her, a curved blade flashing in his hand as he made to plunge it through her head. She rolled, and the sword struck stone, sparking. By the time she got to her feet, he'd raised the sword again. She caught his feint to the left before he struck at her right. She danced aside. The man was still swinging when she drove the base of her palm straight into his nose and slammed her other fist into his gut. The man dropped to the floor, blood gushing from his nose. She panted, the air ragged in her already burning throat. She really, really needed water. None of the 4 men on the ground moved. The master began smiling. And it was then that the others gathered around the chamber stepped closer to the light. Men and women. All tan, though their hair showed the range of the various kingdoms on the continent. Selena inclined her head. None of them nodded back. Selena kept one eye on the 4 men before her as they got to their feet, sheathed their weapons, and stalked back to the shadows. Hopefully they wouldn't take it personally. She scanned the shadows again, bracing herself for more assailants. Nearby, a young woman watched her, and she flashed Selena a conspirator's grin. Selena tried not to look too interested, though the girl was one of the most stunning people she'd ever beheld. It wasn't just her wine-red hair or the color of her eyes, a red-brown Selena had never seen before. No, it was the girl's armor that initially caught her interest, ornate to the point of probably being useless, but still a work of art. The right shoulder was fashioned into a snarling wolf's head, and her helmet, tucked into the crook of her arm, featured a wolf hunched over the nose guard. Another wolf's head had been molded into the pommel of her broadsword. On anyone else, the armor might have looked flamboyant and ridiculous. But on the girl, there was a strange, boyish sort of carelessness to her. Still, Selena wondered how it was possible not to be sweltering to death inside all that armor. The master clapped Selena on the shoulder and beckoned to the girl to come forward. Not to attack, a friendly invitation. The girl's armor clinked as it moved, but her boots were near silent. The master used his hands to form a series of motions between the girl and Selena. The girl bowed low, then gave her that wicked grin again.
"I'm Ansel," she said, her voice bright, amused. She had a barely perceptible lilt to her accent that Selena couldn't place. "Looks like we're sharing a room while you're here."
The master gestured again, his calloused, scarred fingers creating rudimentary gestures that Ansel could somehow decipher.
"Say, how long will that be, actually?"
Selena fought her frown. 1 month. She inclined her head to the master. "If you allow me to stay that long." With the month that it took to get here, and the month it would take to get home, she'd be away from Rifthold 3 months before she returned.
The master merely nodded and walked back to the cushions atop the dais. "That means you can stay," Ansel whispered,
and then touched Selena's shoulder with an armor-clad hand. Apparently not all the assassins here were under a vow of silence, or had a sense of personal space.
"You'll start training tomorrow," Ansel went on. "At dawn."
The master sank onto the cushions, and Selena almost sagged with relief. Aerobin had made her think that convincing him to train her would be nearly impossible. Fool. Pack her off to the desert to suffer, would he?
"Thank you," Selena said to the master,
keenly aware of the eyes watching her in the hall as she bowed again. He waved her away.
"Come,"
Ansel said, her hair shimmering in a ray of sunlight.
"I suppose you want a bath before you do anything else.
I certainly would if I were you." Ansel gave her a smile that stretched the splattering of freckles across the bridge of her nose and cheeks. Selena glanced sidelong at the girl and her ornate armor and followed her from the room.
"That's the best thing I've heard in weeks," she said.
Alone with Ansel as they strode through the halls, Selena keenly felt the absence of the long daggers usually sheathed in her belt, but they'd been taken from her at the gate, along with her sword and her pack. She let her hands dangle at her sides, ready to react to the slightest movement from her guide. Whether or not Ansel noticed Selena's readiness to fight, the girl swung her arms casually, her armor clanking with the movement. Her roommate, that was an unfortunate surprise. Sharing a room with Sam for a few nights was one thing. But a month with a complete stranger? Selena studied Ansel out of the corner of her eye. She was slightly taller, but Selena couldn't see much else about her thanks to the armor. She'd never spent much time around other girls, save the courtesans that Aerobin invited to the keep for parties or took to the theater. And most of them were not the sort of person that Selena cared to know. There were no other female assassins in Aerobin's guild. But here, in addition to Ansel, there had been just as many women as men. In the keep, there was no mistaking who she was. Here, she was only another face in the crowd. For all she knew, Ansel might be better than her. The thought didn't sit well.
"So," Ansel said, her brows rising. "Selena Sardothian."
"Yes." Ansel shrugged. Or at least shrugged as well as she could, given the armor.
"I thought you'd be more dramatic."
"Sorry to disappoint," Selena said, not sounding very sorry at all. Ansel steered them up a short staircase, then down a long hall. Children popped in and out of the rooms along the passage, buckets and brooms and mops in hand. The youngest looked about 8, the eldest about 12.
"Acolytes,"
Ansel said in response to Selena's silent question. "Cleaning the rooms of the older assassins is part of their training,
teaches them responsibility and humility, or something like that.
Ansel winked at a child who gaped up at her as she passed. Indeed, several of the children stared after Ansel, their eyes wide with wonder and respect. Ansel must be well regarded, then. None of them bothered to look at Selena. She raised her chin.
And how old were you when you came here?
The more she knew, the better.
I had barely turned 13, Ansel said, so I narrowly missed having to do the drudgery work.
And how old are you now?
Trying to get a read on me, are you?
Selena kept her face blank.
I just turned 18.
You look about my age, too.
Selena nodded. She certainly didn't have to yield any information about herself. Even though Aerobin had ordered her not to hide her identity here, that didn't mean she had to give away details. And at least Selena had started her training at 8. She had several years on Ansel. That had to count for something.
Has training with the Master been effective?
Ansel gave her a rueful smile.
I wouldn't know. I've been here for 5 years, and he still refused to train me personally. Not that I care. I'd say I'm pretty damn good with or without his expertise.
Well, that was certainly odd.
How had she gone so long without working with the Master?
Though many of Aerobin's assassins never received private lessons with him, either.
Where are you from originally? Selena asked.
The Flatlands.
The Flatlands? Where in hell were the Flatlands?
Ansel answered for her.
Along the coast of the Western Wastes, formerly known as the Witch Kingdom.
The Wastes were certainly familiar, but she'd never heard of the Flatlands.
My father, Ansel went on, is Lord of Briarcliff. He sent me here for training, so I might make myself useful.
But I don't think 500 years would be enough to teach me that.
Despite herself, Selena chuckled.
She stole another glance at Ansel's armor. Don't you get hot in all that armor?
Of course, Ansel said, tossing her shoulder-length hair. But you have to admit it's rather striking, and very well suited for strutting about a fortress full of assassins. How else am I to distinguish myself?
Where did you get it from?
Not that she might want some for herself. She had no use for armor like that.
Oh, I had it made for me.
So, Ansel had money then. Plenty of it if she could throw it away on armor.
But the sword?
Ansel patted the wolf-shaped hilt at her side.
Belongs to my father.
His gift to me when I left. I figured I'd have the armor to match it.
Wolves are a family symbol.
They entered an open walkway, the heat of the mid-afternoon sun slamming into them with full force. Yet Ansel's face remained jovial. And if the armor did indeed make her uncomfortable, she didn't show it. Ansel looked her up and down.
How many people have you killed?
Selena almost choked, but kept her chin high.
I don't see how any of that is your concern.
Ansel chuckled.
I suppose it'd be easy enough to find out.
You must leave some indication if you're so notorious.
Actually, it was Aerobin who usually saw to it that word got out through the proper channels. She left very little behind once her job was finished. Leaving a sign felt somewhat cheap.
I'd want everyone to know that I'd done it, Ansel added.
Well, Selena did want everyone to know that she was the best, but something about the way Ansel said it seemed different from her own reasoning.
So, which of you looks worse?
Ansel asked suddenly.
You, or the person who gave those to you?
Selena knew that she meant the fading bruises and cuts on her face. Her stomach tightened. It was getting to be a familiar feeling.
Me,
Selena said quietly.
She didn't know why she admitted it.
Bravado might have been the better option. But she was tired, and suddenly so heavy with the weight of that memory.
Did your master do that to you?
Ansel asked. This time, Selena stayed silent, and Ansel didn't push her. At the other end of the walkway, they took a spiral stone staircase down into an empty courtyard, where benches and little tables stood in the shade of the towering date trees. Someone had left a book lying atop one of the wooden tables, and as they passed by, Selena glimpsed the cover. The title was in a scrawling, strange script that she didn't recognize. If she'd been alone,
She might have paused to flip through the book, just to see the words printed in a language so different from anything she knew. But Ansel continued on toward a pair of carved wooden doors.
The baths. It's one of the places here where silence is actually enforced, so try to keep quiet. Don't splash too much either. Some of the older assassins can get cranky about even that.
Ansel pushed one of the doors open.
Take your time. I'll see to it that your things are brought to our room. When you're done, ask an acolyte to take you there. Dinner isn't for a few hours. I'll come by the room then.
Selena gave her a long look. The idea of Ansel, or anyone, handling the weapons and gear she'd left at the gate, wasn't appealing. Not that she had anything to hide, though she did cringe inwardly at the thought of the guards pawing at her undergarments as they searched her bag. Her taste for very expensive and very delicate underwear wouldn't do much for her reputation. But here she was at their mercy, and her letter of approval depended on her good behavior and good attitude. So Selena merely said, "Thank you," before striding past Ansel and into the herb-scented air beyond the doors. While the fortress had communal baths, they were thankfully separated between men and women, and at that point in the day, the women's baths were empty. Hidden by towering palms and date trees sagging with the weight of their fruit, the baths were made from the same sea green and cobalt tiles that had formed the mosaic in the master's chamber, kept cool by white awnings jutting out from the walls of the building. There were multiple large pools, some steamed, some bubbled, some steamed and bubbled. But the one Selena slipped into was utterly calm and clear and cold. Selena stifled a groan as she submerged herself and stayed under until her lungs ached. While modesty was a trait she'd learned to live without, she still kept herself low in the water. Of course, it had nothing to do with the fact that her ribs and arms were peppered with fading bruises, and that the sight of them made her sick. Sometimes it was sick with anger. Other times it was with sorrow. Often it was both. She wanted to go back to Rifthold, to see what had happened to Sam, to resume the life that had splintered in a few agonizing minutes. But she also dreaded it. At least, here at the edge of the world, that night, and all of Rifthold and the people it contained, seemed very far away. She stayed in the pool until her hands turned uncomfortably pruny. Ansel wasn't in their tiny rectangular room when Selena arrived, though someone had unpacked Selena's belongings. Aside from her sword and daggers, some undergarments, and a few tunics, she hadn't brought much, and hadn't bothered to bring her finer clothing, which she was grateful for, now that she'd seen how quickly the sand had worn through the bulky clothes the nomad had made her wear. There were two narrow beds, and it took her a moment to figure out which was Ansel's. The red stone wall behind it was bare, aside from the small iron wolf figurine on the bedside table, and a human-sized dummy that must be used to store Ansel's extraordinary armor. Selena would have had no idea that she was sharing a room with anyone. Peeking through Ansel's chest of drawers was equally futile. Burgundy tunics and black pants, all neatly folded. The only things that offset the monotony were several white tunics, garb that many of the men and women had been wearing. Even the undergarments were plain. And folded. Who folded their undergarments? Selena thought of her enormous closet back home, exploding with color and different fabrics and patterns, all tossed together. Her undergarments, while expensive, usually wound up in a heap in their drawer. Sam probably folded his undergarments, though depending on how much of him Arabin had left intact, he might not even be able to now. Arabin would never permanently maim her, but Sam might have fared worse. Sam had always been the expendable one. She shoved the thought away and nestled farther into the bed. Through the small window, the silence of the fortress lulled her to sleep. She'd never seen Arabin so angry, and it was scaring the hell out of her. He didn't yell, and he didn't curse. He just went very still and very quiet. The only signs of his rage were his silver eyes, glittering with a deadly calm. She tried not to flinch in her chair,
as he stood from the giant wooden desk. Sam, seated beside her, sucked in a breath. She couldn't speak. If she started talking, her trembling voice would betray her. She couldn't endure that kind of humiliation.
"Do you know how much money you've cost me?"
Aerobin asked her softly. Selena's palms began sweating. It was worth it, she told herself. Freeing those 200 slaves was worth it. No matter what was about to happen, she'd never regret doing it.
It's not her fault, Sam cut in, and she flashed him a warning glare.
We both thought it was—
Don't lie to me, Sam Cortland,
Aerobin growled.
The only way you became involved in this was because she decided to do it. And it was either let her die trying or help her.
Sam opened his mouth to object, but Aerobin silenced him with a sharp whistle through his teeth. His office doors opened. Wesley, Aerobin's bodyguard, peered in. Aerobin kept his eyes on Selena as he said,
Get Turn, Mullen, and Harding.
This wasn't a good sign. She kept her face neutral, though, as Aerobin continued watching her. Neither she nor Sam dared speak in the long minutes that passed. She tried not to shake. At last, the three assassins, all men, all cut from muscle and armed to the teeth, filed in.
Shut the door,
Aerobin said to Harding, the last one to enter. Then he told the others,
Hold him.
Instantly, Sam was dragged out of his chair, his arms pinned back by Turn and Mullen. Harding took a step in front of them, his fist flexing.
No,
Selena breathed as she met Sam's wide-eyed stare. Aerobin wouldn't be that cruel. He wouldn't make her watch as he hurt Sam. Something tight and aching built in her throat. But Selena kept her head high, even as Aerobin said quietly to her,
You are not going to enjoy this. You will not forget this. And I don't want you to.
She whipped her head back to Sam, a plea for Harding not to hurt him on her lips. She sensed the blow only a heartbeat before Aerobin struck her. She toppled out of her chair and didn't have time to raise herself properly before Aerobin grabbed her by the collar and swung again, his fist connecting with her cheek. Light and darkness reeled. Another blow, hard enough that she felt the warmth of her blood on her face before she felt the pain. Sam began screaming something, but Aerobin hit her again. She tasted blood, yet she didn't fight back, didn't dare to. Sam struggled against Turn and Mullen. They held him firm, Harding putting a warning arm in front of Sam to block his path. Aerobin hit her, her ribs, her jaw, her gut, and her face. Again and again and again. Careful blows. Blows meant to inflict as much pain as possible without doing permanent damage. And Sam kept roaring, shouting words she couldn't quite hear over the agony. The last thing she remembered was a pang of guilt at the sight of her blood staining Aerobin's exquisite red carpet. And then darkness. Blissful darkness. Full of relief that she hadn't seen him hurt Sam. Chapter 3 Selena dressed in the nicest tunic she'd brought, which wasn't really anything to admire, but the midnight blue and gold did bring out the turquoise hues in her eyes. She went so far as to apply some cosmetics to her eyes, but opted to avoid putting anything on the rest of her face. Even though the sun had set, the heat remained. Anything she put on her skin would likely slide right off. Ansel made good on her promise to retrieve her before dinner and pestered Selena with questions about her journey during the walk to the dining hall. As they walked, there were some areas where Ansel talked normally, others where she kept her voice at a whisper, and others where she signaled not to speak at all. Selena couldn't tell why certain rooms demanded utter silence and others did not. They all seemed the same. Still exhausted despite her nap, and unsure when she could speak, Selena kept her answers brief. She wouldn't have minded missing dinner and just sleeping all night. Staying alert as they entered the hall was an effort of will. Yet even with her exhaustion, she instinctively scanned the room.
There were three exits, the giant doors through which they entered, and two servants' doors on either end. The hall was packed wall to wall with long wooden tables and benches full of people, at least 70 of them in total. None of them looked